Okay, hello everybody. Today is October 19th, and this is the Monday night meeting. We meet every Monday night at 9 p.m. We have, if you're listening live, if you're listening live over another network and would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. Participant code is 385-698.
We're getting feedback from somebody's open our speaker.
Yeah, everybody can mute yourselves until we're done here. And any radio hosts that are there, are invited into the queue first if they have a question or a comment. I know that we have Paul in here who sells silver. We're going to kind of take him and give him a few minutes. If you'd like to email a question for us to address, that's at questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. And additional announcements is please support our business partners. We got banners on the right side of our website. Of which the proceeds support NLA's effort to save America. Also, support us by donating $5 a month or more and click on our donation tab on the top right for anybody that doesn't know it. And now look into God's words. Tonight's scripture is Proverbs 14, 1 through 16. And I'll do that quickly here, and we'll get on with the meeting. Proverbs chapter 14. A wise woman buildeth her house, but a foolish will pull down with her hands that which is also built. He that walketh in the right way and feareth God is despised by him that goeth in an infamous way. In the mouth of a fool is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise preserve them. Where there are no oxen, the crib is empty. But where there is much corn, there the strength of the ox is manifest. A faithful witness will not lie, but a deceitful witness uttereth a lie. A sorcerer seeketh wisdom, and finding it not, the learning of the wise is easy. Go against a foolish man, and he knoweth not the lips of prudence. The wisdom of a discreet man is to understand his way, and the imprudence of the fools erreth. A fool will laugh at sin, but among thee just grace shall abide. The heart that knoweth bitterness of his own soul, in his joy the stranger shall not be intermeddled. The house of the wicked shall be destroyed, but the tabernacles of the just shall flourish. There is a way which seemeth just to a man, but the ends thereof lead to death. Laughter shall be mingled with sorrow, and mourning taketh hold of the end of joy. A fool shall be filled with his own ways, and a good man shall be above him. The innocent believeth every word, and the discreet man considereth his steps. No good shall come to the deceitful son, but the wise servant shall prosper in his dealings. And in his way he shall be made straight. A wise man feareth and declineth from evil. The fool leapeth over and is confident. And that's chapters up to verse 16, and that's tonight's reading. Okay. So let's see here. If I'm going to turn the queue on, and if Paul is there, he can get in the queue. And also, we want Marge wants to say something, so she should get in the queue. She tried last week to get in, didn't get in. And then after that, everybody else can get in. So, we have some subjects that are going to kind of, you know, as far as our plan goes, but I think that's going to come out. I'm not going to go on a topic. I think it's going to come up anyway. So, Paul from the coin shop there, please get into the queue if you're here, because I know you wanted to make an announcement tonight, perhaps on what's going on with the interest rate. And we would like Marjorie, Marjorie, are you there? Get in the queue. I'm still waiting for Paul. I have other people from Maine and stuff. I don't see Paul or Marjorie. Hang on. Let me clear the queue again. Let's start over. We're not getting a response. You guys, excuse me. Okay, we got California Marge in the queue. And if Paul is here, you should get in the queue. I'm gonna just go ahead with Marge. If Paul isn't here, he can come in later. The queue is open, so maybe we're going to go ahead and start with Marge now and get the show on the road here. Okay.
Those of you that don't know who I am, I'm Marge Kimberly, and I started out with this organization as a coordinator for El Dorado County in California. And 3 years ago, our sheriff was first introduced to the idea of what a real grand jury is all about, that if indeed the people had the power, there would not be corruption and crime and all sorts of mess that we have today in our counties. And, of course, this is a man that kind of poo-pooed me, wouldn't give me the library to get my people constituted, but I'm here to tell you that we were the first county to file in the courts, and today we have four administrators who have taken the civics course, and technically speaking, we are all ready to go into work and change our nation. So, and we have the deepest regard for National Liberty Alliance because, hey, everything we've learned comes from this organization, so that's terrific. Now, let me just make one thing perfectly clear that I'm thinking about here. You know, New York is New York, and California is California, and Tennessee is Tennessee, and Georgia is Georgia. All of us live in a different kind of a county. Every one of us has a different personality. There are no two of us that are the same, and every one of us is a child of God with an entirely different set of talents and principles and goodness that we have within us. All of us are so necessary in this tapestry if all of the people are to save the nation, and we all have to work together. So, as the story went, I first met with my sheriff one time. And, oh, yeah, I caused a ruckus. Well, the second time I met with one of our administrators, Mr. Bud Mueller, who's a heck of a great guy, and we sat and talked with the sheriff, and he thought, oh, gosh, there's one more idiot, huh, that believes in this grand jury. But again, it was just a very nice professional move to meet him. That's fine. Now, the third time, we did something entirely different. One of our administrators works, and she actually took the time off so that we could have all four administrators sitting in front of our sheriff, who couldn't believe, 2 years ago, that anything would happen other than my mouth full of prunes about a grand jury being seated. So this time we went in, and it's kind of scary when you meet somebody that actually has a business card, because that makes it look like they really intend to do something. Otherwise, they wouldn't spend the money to have the card made. Now, that's a simple analogy, but we all showed him our business card, and our particular card has a Statue of Liberty on it, and other than that, the little different design, it follows all of the aspects of the generic National Liberty Alliance card. So we presented those, and we had an agenda. And let me tell you, the grand jury seal of El Dorado County is specific to our county. It's not specific to anything else, not New York, not any place else, it's El Dorado County. So we had to impress the sheriff one more line up the ladder, so to speak, one more notch. So on the agenda, which we carefully planned and typed out beforehand, we put our grand jury seal because we knew that would really get him. And I even ran his thumbs across it, and I said, look, this is your sealed copy of this agenda here that we're going to discuss. And so we proceeded to discuss the agenda, and a lot of it was local that none of you would be interested in. But nonetheless, what we're doing in this particular case is grooming our sheriff to get ready for the people to go in and take over the courts. And you know that right now, the way our country stands, it's like putting a square peg in a round hole, because we're not about to put a common law jury, grand jury, into a statutory fiat system where they're all, you know, each one is taking a bigger kickback than the next guy. We are in one of the most criminal counties this side of the Pecos. Make no state about, you know, no mistake about that. So now I had a gentleman that is a very, very fine patriot. He loves our country. He knows the scoop. He's not a member of NLA at all, but he handed me a book. And this is what I was trying to tell you about last week. The name of the book is You Know Something Is Wrong When... dot, 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 dot. And it's an American Affidavit of Probable Cause. And it has three different people that are responsible for writing it. One is Anna Reitzinger, which, you know, some of you might know her as Judge Anna. And then James Clinton Belcher, who's another gentleman that is involved in putting this together. And then it's illustrated by a Paul Stover. And it's an 8.5 by 11 book. And it's a soft cover. It's not a hard copy. And boy, I'll tell you, I let it, even though it was gifted to me by a friend, you know, we don't like to read anymore with all these terrific videos. And so I let it set in my inbox for about a week, and then I picked it up. I said, look, he was nice enough to give it to you. He thought it was important for you to look at. Do it. So I started into it. And the reason why I was interested in it is because on the back cover it says, what can you do with this book? And it says, you can change the world. Give copies to the bureaucrats, local, state, and federal. Remind them who they really work for, which is, of course, you and I. And they've long forgotten that one, let me tell you. So I looked through the book, and I saw that it really, you know, we're in a very complex, multifaceted world. We all know that. And it took all of the misrepresentations, all the scams and the frauds, and beginning with the Vatican, because, by the way, Anna Reitzinger, actually, if the truth were known, is a private attorney general for Pope Francis. Now, the Pope, anything about the Vatican, is absolutely not connected with the Boy Scouts. It's one of the most criminal, disgusting organizations that this planet has ever been, you know, able to, just the worst. So Anna happens to work closely with the Pope. So if I were to have predicated my feeling about the value of this book on what Anna is doing with the Pope, because she could be Catholic, how do I know? We're all different religions. Okay, I would have probably not been interested in reading it. But the thing that got me when I first went into it is it showed a globe of the world, and it was, and a little caption over it said, the jigsaw puzzle. And what it said is the information supporting this affidavit has been compiled for many years by many Americans who have suffered every kind of outrage and injustice. We can't possibly name them all. Some are dead, some are in prison, but they each came forward under dire threat and contributed their place to this puzzle. And one of the pieces of the puzzle has a U on it, Y-O-U, which means that we're still very much alive and we're all part of this puzzle. Okay, so when I read the book, I had a new respect for it, regardless of whether Judge Anna was part of it, or, and she's not really a judge, but whatever we want to call her. She's a very, very well-read individual, knows all about our currency reset that's we're about to be confronted with, and all about our monetary judicial system, the whole nine yards. And she is certainly not thinking we're in a wonderful world of the good ship lollipop, okay? She knows we're in trouble, and she talks in the book about how we're chattel from the very beginning, and goodness gracious, we've got more than a pound of flesh on our head that they all leverage and make bucks galore off of us, and we're just the finishing end of a scam in this country, and we haven't really known what freedom is for many, many years. So I decided, wow, based on the back of the book and what I read, and hopefully after what I have achieved under the NLA auspices, I would hope that someone would think I've gotten somewhere, somehow. Our jury isn't seated yet, obviously, because we're not ready to do it yet. As John Jerash often says, you know, we have to educate these guys. These sheriffs don't know, they haven't got a clue. Many of them don't know even a quarter of what you and I know out there, okay? So what I did is I took an 8.5 piece of paper that matched the actual dimensions of the book. I took a glue stick. Of course, I typed in a fabulous dedication to Sheriff John DeAugustini. You know, it is, I'm not reading you exactly, I'm going to paraphrase. You know, it's with the greatest hope that this book will open your eyes to what's going on and the criminality that we're facing in this county. And hopefully you know that the four of us are behind you 100%, ready to serve any way we can. And we're in your corner, and we want you to really enjoy this book. And all four of us signed our names. We met on a Saturday, so that we could each have a different color pen, so that he wouldn't think we faked the signatures. I mean, we wanted him to know we met and cared enough to give him this book, see, which opens up all the crime you know, it's just really a great little tool. And then in the end, just so he knows that we're not playing games with him, you can't see it because obviously it's a raised seal on the white paper inside of a cover, you know, so probably he won't even notice it. But we actually even put our seal, which represents nobody else but the people, we the people of El Dorado County. So we prepared the book, and I was really excited about it. Boy, last Monday I was going to come on and tell you about this great book we got, okay? This wonderful book that would make a terrific tool. And I was even outrageous enough to think, whoa, this is such a terrific tool with what she says in here. And I would think that knowing quite a bit about my country and being very, very awake as one American individual, I would think that my absolute decision to vet this book, the same as I would vet in a book before my kids would read it, if I were teaching them something, would certainly bring respect enough from NLA to carefully listen to what I was trying to say. But unfortunately, nobody in this organization has read the book, and the fact that Anna is associated with the Vatican has immediately put the kibosh on anyone thinking this book is any good, and suddenly I have become a villain for wanting to give this to my sheriff. Let me tell you, I'm not on anybody's payroll here. I'm on the payroll of the heart and soul.
Oh,
I'm
hey,
on
Mark.
The payroll of,
hey,
of saving my country.
Hey, Marge.
And,
Marge, can you hear me?
Marge.
Okay.
Marge.
We disagreed. We disagreed with using the seal out of band.
Excuse me?
Well, listen, Gary, let her go because I'm going to respond to each thing.
She's all right, go ahead.
More responses to go here. Let her go. I can
hey,
answer each point.
Look, I know that you don't take the seal and put it on a cocktail napkin from Uncle Joe's steakhouse, okay? You don't use it on toilet paper, and you don't use it on notepads. It's a sacred seal to be used in a courtroom on documents. I get it. But we're trying to accomplish something. something here in our El Dorado County way with our personality. And so far, we have four administrators. We're registered in the county. The sheriff knows who we are. The seal is probably not even going to be noticed by him. And all of a sudden, I've hit a brick wall, and suddenly National Liberty Alliance thinks that I have gone beyond here.
Let me stop you now before you go too far. I want to respond to that, and then I'll give you a chance to come back and redirect. Okay, so you got this book, which I haven't seen. I don't know that anybody sent me a copy, but I've never seen it. I am very familiar with Anna von Ritz. I'm also familiar with what the Pope is doing in his motu proprio and some of the other stuff going on, because that's sort of my preview to watch these things, because these are things that will ultimately affect us. There's a movement going on in the top, and I believe that there's a vacuum being created, and everybody wants to move in that vacuum, including the Pope, and they're going to create the vacuum. So you got this book. Anna von Ritz lays out a lot of good stuff, and the way she does it is I've never seen it done before like that. It takes it from the beginning to the end in such a way that you've never seen it all placed in chronological order like that. It's very powerful, so it's very good. I mean, I've seen her letters. I've seen her letter to the Archbishop where she responds, and it's kind of a condensed version of that book, and that's all well and good. The reason that we kind of got our hair up when you said you put the seal on it is because they have an agenda to bring in an international body to bring things back to common law. Well, that right away should be a red flag. So, look, National Liberty Alliance is based on common law, natural law. And even though every county is different and every person's different, and common law and natural law recognizes that, that's why they don't want it. They want to go by statutes, which is more like a robotic IBM card type thing. However, the law never changes. The principles don't change. The fundamental principles don't change. So when a county puts a stamp on a book that an organization's putting out, what you're doing is you're giving your approval, you're disseminating their ideas. You're bringing them people.
That's
and
true.
You're saying that we totally agree what you're doing. Now, I know you put it on a piece of paper and you made it more to El Dorado County as a gift to the sheriff, so it didn't actually go in.
Absolutely.
Right.
No NLAs mentioned. No. Yeah.
Right. Well,
no NLAs mentioned.
Because look, NLA, right now we have a unified common law grand jury seated because of the situation we're in until we get into the courts. So ultimately, every grand jury out there, every county is following our plan. We have a plan. And our thing is that everybody follows this plan. We all look the same, sound the same. If a county gets in trouble, it's up to NLA to come in and answer that. And that's part of our power, is the fact that we are in every state. When something goes on, like the case with Dean over there in Utah, and they get calls nationwide and papers from all over, plus people from the county, they don't know how to deal with that. Our power is in the fact that we're in all 50 states, we have lots of people, and we have to protect that and continue to. This is a show, don't forget. Like Bill Thornton says, when you go to court, basically you're putting on a show, and you get one chance to do it. You know, the curtain comes up, and you put your show on. So when whatever county is in first, and I don't really care who's first, somebody has to be first, but everything has to go off like clockwork, and we can't afford to be making a mistake or putting ourselves in a position where somebody's going to misunderstand what we represent. And so without seeing the book and understanding the Pope brought this new Constitution to be read to Congress, And if that's what Anna is pushing or the Pope is pushing, I have a problem with that, because that takes our sovereignty away. And we don't want anybody to think that we're going to – I mean, right now they have this global police force they're putting in with the mayors. And that's all part of it to bring a one world order in. So,
well, of course,
we have to be very careful about how we present this. Now, we've already quoted Anna von Ritz. We quoted her as a judge. We also said we didn't know if she was a judge. But nevertheless, we actually sent a paper into the federal courts, and we quoted her work because it was good. And at that point, we don't care because we also know, look, Anna von Ritz didn't give us the information firsthand. Most of the stuff she had in there I already know. I've been in this battle all my life. I was raised knowing about the Trilateral Commission when I was 14 years old. So I've been, you know, I'm 58. I've been in this game a long, long time, Marge, as long as you have, maybe longer. So I've been waiting and looking and watching the stuff that's going on. So most people don't have that discernment. You know what I mean? Most people don't understand.
True.
And it's very hard to educate people that have been dumbed down. So all we were saying is, look, before we put any kind of our seal of approval, or as the Vatican would say, our National Liberty Alliance imprimatur on it. And the reason I'm saying that is because even though El Dorado County is separate in the battle to get into the court, we are one. We are one. We are all 50, and we are one. And so we have to go in there as one. So we can't have somebody saying one thing while we're doing another or trying to defend something if we don't know what's going on. And we didn't even shoot the book down. I want to see it. And we could even use the book with a caveat. You know what I mean? We could say, look, the information is good, but we're not on board with the solution being a global solution. Look, every country can come in and do what we're doing. But as far as any global board or panel that's going to come in and tell somebody else what to do in this country or in any other country, I mean, we have no more right to tell South America what to do than they have to tell us what to do. And that's what's going on. Look,
correct.
America's in 106 countries. That's wrong. And we have an attitude that we can tell the rest of the world. Well, the New World Order people, they think we're too stupid. They're going to tell us what to do. So
correct.
I don't know what kind of caveat. We can use that information, and we're not going to ignore it because that's what they do to us. When they have a situation where we have a win, let's say, they never run around and lick their wounds. They go, how can we use this to our advantage? And that's what we're going to do.
That's correct.
We're going to do the same thing they do. We're going to say, look, here's some good information. Now, make no mistake about it. The reason this system's going down is because it's been designed to go down. And it needs to go down because they need to take the next step. And it's so corrupt, and everybody is aware of the corruption now because they can't hide it. So what they're going to do is they're going to poke themselves in the eye. They have to take some of their own down to vilify the system that's in, because we all know it's corrupt. Everybody knows it's corrupt. Even the people in it know it's corrupt. So what they'll do is they'll go ahead and they'll take the system down. Maybe they'll say they're going to put Bush in jail and Clinton or whatever. It doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican, it makes no difference. They'll get everybody all excited that things are going to change. And they'll use that to take the next step, which will be to kill our sovereignty. So we have to be aware that this is what's happening. You know, we had the Vatican General approach us over a year ago wanting to come in with us, and he said they would give us money and they would give us enforcement. And the enforcement that they talk about is really an enforcement through the U.N., and we all know what that means. Anybody that's been, like, I know, Marge, you know.
Yeah.
Look, you talk.
Absolutely.
Trilateral, we know what the UN is. That's what's running things right now. And, you know, I grew up and they said, oh, the UN's not that powerful. Everybody ignores them. But meanwhile, they have these meetings. They decide where the world's going to go. So with all that in mind, anything that goes on in any county, we're looking at the bigger picture of what we're going to do. And Anna is kind of a person who's a national figure that's a big picture, and we have to be very careful how we use her or use any of her material, as we would have to be careful of anything we use from the Pope or the Vatican. And don't get me wrong.
Right.
Look, I call, look, if it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. And I don't care where it comes from. You know.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I was in politics, and I ran in an office in the town, and I was very politically incorrect because I spoke my mind. And they told me you can't do that, and a lot of people didn't like it. But I'll tell you what, most people like it because they're sick of this political correctness. And so that's what we need to do with these types of subjects. We need to be that common law voice that look at God's law doesn't change. The law doesn't change. You know, murder is murder. I don't care. You know, you have Bill Clinton, what is the meaning of is, and all this relativism, you know, if a tree falls in the woods and you didn't hear it, you tap and kind of baloney. That's all baloney to cloud and the issue and make it a gray area. So look at Marge. We didn't shoot the book down or anything else. We just wanted to put the brakes on as far as using the seal. I thought it was on the cover of the book. Doesn't matter. It was personalized to him on a sheet that could be pulled out.
But
we have to be very careful
very
when we use those seals.
Well, in fact, Bud can tell you, Bud loves our seal, and he would have loved to have had me use it a million different ways, and no. I told him, no, you can't. It's a pretty sacred thing. It's when we get in the courts, then we use it on our documents. I'm very well aware of how that should be used. But this guy is got a lot of intrepidations about us now because he knows that we're very serious about straightening out our world, and we think we've got a friendship with him. So we thought that this book has such clout, and, Gerard, we've got to see somehow that you get a copy of it. We'll pull it off somehow, I guess. I don't know.
Look, Marge, it's hard to make a decision on an idea. If I don't see the actual physical thing, I can't say, oh, yeah, I'm going to go for it. You know what I mean? We really need to look at it. And it is a discussion. Look, it's so important because it's not just about El Dorado County. If we think that that's a good resource, then it goes to everybody. And before we put anything to everybody,
you got it. It would be on the NLA side as one of our available products. Yes.
Right. So
if we thought it would be good too.
Okay, let's use the Vatican's idea, and as far as keeping us pure, we don't let anything out unless it has the people's imprimatur on it. That says that this is pure common law. You know what I'm saying? And
exactly.
So we're teaching people. Look, when you teach people, you don't. If you're really going to teach them, you can't censor. So you have to teach them about the bad as well with the good. And so a book like this that maybe has something that's leading to in a direction where we don't want to go, but it's using the actual facts of what's going on. And don't forget, you know, that's what the father of lies does. He takes the truth and he wraps it in lies. And so it looks real good and it smells good. And then you eat it and it tastes good. And when it hits your belly, it turns bitter. So that's all we're talking about.
And we will
further address. So I think we that was just a misunderstanding because somebody had said you were sending paperwork into the courts, and that was absolutely
not. Oh my gosh!
And I actually didn't hear that until today. I wasn't privy to that, but I don't pay any attention to rumors. You know what I mean? I try to get the things from the horse's mouth. But we're very much sensitive to those things that are going to affect the whole group. You know, look at once you get in your county, you're going to make decisions every day about what to do, and nobody's going to be there to help you unless it's a major thing where you're going to come in and ask for questions. But other than that, you're going to do your own thing. I also wanted to bring up, when we reconstituted the common law grand juries and we went from county to county, put announcements in and ads in the paper and posters, and then we had the meeting and we voted on it, we all put our seals, that raised seal, on that piece of paper. So every county should have that paper. And that, you brought something up with the sheriff with the seal. And they did say in my county, they got seals. They were very surprised that we had a seal. And some people think that
it's very effective if used appropriately.
Well, look, yeah. Every corporation has a seal, too, so that kind of blows the credibility right there. So the average person thinks a seal is a big thing, and it is a big thing. It does say something. A court of record should have a seal, like Thornton says. It bequeaths a certain authority. So let's not forget those papers that we sealed the first time when we sent them into the county.
Right.
Because that, those uh-huh. are there, and I would bring a copy of that to the sheriff. Look, we had a meeting. We posted in the post office. We took an ad in the paper. You know what I mean? We sent press releases, blah, 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 and we had a vote. That's due process, man. And here's our seal.
Yes, it is.
So that's important, you know, and let's not forget that. And right now, the government is going down to the grassroots, to the people. They're coming in with all this sustainable freedom, sustainable development, this Agenda 21, because that's what...
All Agenda 21. Anytime you hear the word sustainable, yeah. Yep.
Right. And so that's how they're bringing the New World Order to our doorstep. That's where they're going to do it. They're going to do it with their zoning and building codes. They're going to do it with all this baloney. If you listen to Chris Ann Hall, she's an attorney, she talks about this new global police force and this new attorney general and where her loyalties are, which is to the president, not to the people, and that's who she's supposed to be working for. She's got a very good 15-minute video out that explains this whole business of what they're doing now. And what they're doing is exactly what we should be doing, which is what you did, which is get into your sheriff and start explaining things to him, because ultimately this battle is going to be at the county level. The foot soldiers are going to be in the street, and it's going to be us, and it's going to be those officials that we're battling, and we need to be ahead of the curve with them on educating them and giving them the idea of what this country is about. And not everybody's going to get it, and not everybody's going to be able to do it. But look, my hopes is that we get enough states that it starts to domino. So I don't want to take all this time up. We got other people that are going to come into the queue. And I don't know if you have anything else you want to say, Marge, but, you know, we did not throw your book out. We want to see it. And, I mean, I kind of know what's in it. I like the way Anna Von Ritz lays out the whole, all the different things that happened that brought us to this particular place, because the way she writes it, it's very, you go, oh, I get it now. I get all those different things, how they dovetail. You see, that's what she provided. She provided the dovetailing of one to the other, which you normally don't see. You know, you're not connecting Woodrow Wilson and Roosevelt and then, you know, the Queen of England and all this other stuff. And that's exactly what Anna did. She took it right back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Right back to Rome.
She knows
and everything
how to do
else.
It.
And that's
right.
That's
she knows how to do it. It is a talent with her. Yeah. I just want to say one more thing, Gerard.
Yeah. Go ahead.
All of these things that are getting into local government, you know, all of this Agenda 21 and this latest caper with all the mayors, you know, going to lie about who the conservatives are and who the sovereigns are, and they're going to get rewarded and all that coming from the Department of Justice and all. This is all being done with bribes. Now, the irony of the whole thing is all these bribes are being done with from the broke corporation with all the fiat money, and the idiots out there taking all this don't even know they're getting it. So, I mean, the whole thing is I would like to call it a complete smoke and mirror scam. It's an illusion. The whole thing is an illusion. It seems real, but it's all being done under fraud, all of it.
Yes, and most of what they do is smoke and mirrors anyway. Most of it is psyops. And don't forget, people, they want to rule us by fear. And if you start fearing them, then they won. And one of the things that
exactly.
we do is we speak with authority to them, and that's what scares them, because they're not used to that, you know. So, you know, just
exactly.
remember that and don't buy into the lie. Well, anyway, thank you, Marge. We appreciate all your work, and we'll be talking.
Well, Gerard, I need an address to send this to, so could you advise Gary Jolly on where I can send it, and then I'll see that you get a copy.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to go to the next caller, who is Laura from Washington. Laura, you are unmuted, or you should be anyway. Are you there? No, it didn't go. I'm going to try it again. Laura, you're unmuted.
Gerard.
Go ahead.
Actually, we're in Virginia now and not Washington.
Oh, it says Washington, but...
Yeah, it probably does.
I'm just going what my screen
anyway,
says, right.
I just wanted to say that, I have a friend that's high up in the military, and he's more than willing to help us enforce the documents. And you guys have talked to him, and he said that you were supposed to mail him a bunch of paperwork, and he never got it.
Yeah. Gerard, that's the Randy Kramer guy that we spoke to. The guy that's in the special Marines.
Oh, yeah. We did. That was a while ago we talked to him, right?
Yeah, but
we just haven't filed anything that would be leveraging him yet, Laura.
You haven't?
Yeah,
okay.
We have not filed anything that would leverage him.
We had an in-depth conversation with him, and he kind of let us know what he was good for, because he is out there sort of looking at all these things, but he cannot guarantee us any enforcement. All he can do is pass things up to the different departments, and he said he would do that. We haven't had anything that we are ready to have him pass up anymore. Plus, he's watching us anyway. So he's passing up whatever he thinks is pertinent to whoever he thinks he should, but he's also given us his name and number in case we think that, you know, he should pass something up to the Joint Chiefs of Staff or this one or that one. He told us that he would be willing to do that. He told us he has absolutely no influence over them whatsoever. Of course, having a door that opens from somebody like him could make the difference between somebody reading your paper and not reading your paper. So we are aware of him, and we haven't had a reason to use him yet. And I don't know if we will or we won't, but we definitely, you know, we know he's there and we know what his capabilities are, and we'll use him accordingly. So we appreciate that.
Oh, good. Okay. Now, one other question is a different subject. Have you heard of this bank called the Weir Bank, capital R-E, capital W-E, bank.com? Have you heard of it?
I have heard something about it. I don't know the particulars.
Okay.
I remember reading about it. I read so much stuff. I refresh my memory as far as what they're supposedly doing.
Well, they basically created a bank just like the banksters, and so you get a checkbook of promissory notes to pay off all your debt.
Sounds like more. sounds pretty dangerous to me. So they're creating more fiat money just what this country needs. What we're
drowning. They're not. Not at all. I mean, well, no, actually, if you go to the website, it'll explain it to you. But it doesn't have anything to do with fiat currency at all. But I'm just curious if you knew anything about it.
I read a little something about them forming, and I didn't really understand what they were doing. And there is a lot of movements out there, you know, with the Bitcoin thing and Texas putting gold in, which is – those are good things, by the way. You know, Bitcoin is good because it's anonymous, and it actually does represent gold, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Texas putting in actual real money backed by gold, that's what we need. And the fact that you have, a whole state that's doing this now, this is signs that their system is crumbling. And look, you got to be an idiot not to know that it's crumbling. The thing is can we get these things in quick enough? Because it's going to be an avalanche. Once it starts going, it's going to go downhill really fast. And they know that too. And that's kind of what they're getting ready for, because they got to create enough havoc to make the people scream, because they're going to give us the solution. And believe me, the solution they have for us, you're not going to want. It has to be a solution that we have ready and the people put in place. And that's the race right now. This is a big race.
Right. So have you heard about Dr. Cash's proposal? He has this little unit for free energy for everybody's house, and he's given them to different countries already. And so we can get off of paying for, you know.
You know, all the free energy stuff, there's a lot of it out there, and every time somebody tries to give it away, they make the thing disappear or the person disappear.
Well, he's been kidnapped and poisoned, and his family's been threatened, but for years he's been, and he actually did this worldwide. I just was curious if you'd heard about it at all.
No, I've heard some of the free energy things that people put out there, and you know, you have to put it out there like as shareware, something that you can download and they can't stop. You know what I mean?
He has the technology for, because nothing is patented. Anybody has access to it, but he actually has like millions of units that he's already made.
Right.
He has orders for them too.
Just curious. Anyway,
hello?
Okay, so I won't take up any more time, but I just wanted to find out what was going on with Randy, so thanks.
Hang on, I seem to have lost my speakers. I can't hear anybody. I don't know if anybody else is out there, but just give me a minute and I'll see if I can get this thing to play sounds. Technical difficulty here. Can you hear me? Somebody say anything. I don't hear anything.
Yes, we hear you, Gerard.
I'm sorry. I lost my sound for a few minutes. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And Gerard, before you go to the next call, I'd like to give a written question in. So as soon as Laura's done.
I'm done.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, Laura, thank you very much. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah. Okay, Gerard, I'd like to read this question. There is a gentleman who sent this in. What is the process when a habeas corpus gets to the resistance stage? It says on the site that it will take a while. I thought John said the habeas corpus was a slam dunk. I don't have very much money. My grandson is in CPS custody illegally. I've downloaded the papers, started filling them out, but I don't want to send in a lot of money until I can be assured that there really will be a success. I mean, I don't know what he means by a lot of money. I mean, I think we're talking $60, but do we want to discuss openly the resistance strategy?
Well, we could go over it kind of vaguely, because look, they should know that what they're doing is violating due process. And we know that they default because they can't answer us, and that's basically why it's a slam dunk. It's actually a lot simpler than people think it is. If you pay attention to what we're saying, and we don't always lay our strategy right out there because we don't necessarily want to educate them faster than we're educating our people. I'm getting feedback from somebody out there. But one of the things that's going to happen is, look, they don't answer, and then they default, so you file your default. And then if they violate that, you file your writ of errors and your decisions, and then eventually you're going to judge that's going to violate due process, even in the federal court, if they're going to go that far. And then what you're going to do is you're going to throw that judge into the case. You're going to put him in. That's your resistance strategy. Look, you sue him, and you put him on. And what happens is when you sue him, he has to remove himself because now he's being sued, and you're suing him in the federal court because he's violated your due process rights. And what we've discovered in other cases where we've gone up through the state courts and you get into federal courts, and pretty soon you have a prosecutor and a judge and another judge and a prosecutor and all these attorneys, and you got 15 guys standing up at the bench. They want to get you out. The quickest thing they want to do is get you out of the court. And so they'll figure out something, even if it, then they'll do let's make a deal type thing. And we've had those victories that people say, well, we don't have a victory, because those victories don't get put on the books. What happens is they do a backroom deal, and they let you go. You know, it's up to the person whether or not they take that deal. You know what I mean? I mean, we don't tell anybody that they should take the deal or not take the deal. That's totally up to them. I mean, we would take it as far as they wanted to go. I mean, eventually the deal gets sweet enough, you almost have to take it. You know, I mean, what was her name there? She went into court and they said, just pay $50 and get out of here. And she said, absolutely not, I'm going to sue all you. And they finally said, well, I'll give you $75. And as far as she was concerned, that was good enough, you know. So, look, that's a real, real simplification of the resistance strategy. I think anybody that's on here can understand that. I mean, if you got any question, Gary, on that, just, you know, let me know. What happened? I lost you. Gary? I lost Gary. But anyway, yeah, Gary was in the thing. I don't see him now. But anyway, that's my answer. I don't know if anybody has a comeback to that or wants to go any further with that. If Gary gets back in, I don't know what happened to Gary, where he went. But he's not. I don't see him.
Okay, actually, I got muted because I was causing feedback, which is good. Don't get me wrong. But yes, and then his other question blended into that was, there were a number of cases that were in the queue, in the status, and they went away. Why is that? What's going on? And I think the answer to
that. Well, you know what? I can't speak to that because I wasn't part of that. Now,
yeah, I can speak to that. I can speak to that part. Yeah. We had kind of a breakdown in our system with the intake, and that has been corrected. And if you go into the site now, you're going to see that there's not only those cases have been adjusted, there's a quite a few more other cases that are now in the queue. We had a little bit of a snafu with our intake coordinator with a legal difficulty, and now we have moved on. We're on to the next phase. We have a new intake coordinator going to be stepping in and taking over, a real hot rocket ready to go. So don't be in a panic. It's just our processes. We're having a little bit of our own growing pains. We're kind of, you know, changing over from being strictly an information organization to something that requires output. And we've had some snafus, but we're moving forward. Things are happening. And I will yield.
People should not forget that this is a learning process for everybody, including the administration of NLA. You know, we've been in the court for 5 or 6 years, but that doesn't mean we know everything. The fact is we know enough common law to get by. But what happens is, you do a paperwork and you say, well, this is too unwieldy. It's too bulky. It's getting bogged down here. We got a bottleneck, and then we change it. And so those are important things. And eventually, it's going to get streamlined to the point that it's going to work like a well-oiled machine. And that's what's going on. This, you know, it's a new organization. It's new radical stuff. You know, the only ones that can fix it are those of us who have created it. We have to make it fit what we're doing, and that's what's going on. And you're going to have bumps in the road, you know. And look at, you know, when we say it's going to be a long time, you know, relatively speaking, do you realize what lawyers do to you in court? I mean, the long time John's talking about doesn't even have a fraction of what they do to you for a long time. You know,
right,
our
and they're
long
billing
time
you hundreds
is,
per hour.
Is probably a flash compared to them.
It's made to drive up those billable hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And since we're not billing for the hours, we have no point to drag it out.
That's right. And look at the lawyers. They're getting $1,500, $2,000 for every paper they write, and they don't want to write, but they make a lot of money. They cooperate with each other to drag it out because they're both making money. There's no reason that they shouldn't drag it out. And that's exactly what you get. Now, you know, we say uphill battles in a long time, but that's still better than anything that you'll get out of their system. You know, what we get with our pressure and our resistance, and that is going to be way better than anything they're going to give you. You know, I mean, if you don't have many millions of dollars today, you know, you can get all the justice you can afford, and I'm afraid they could break the richest man out there if they really dig in. You know what I mean? Even that won't work if they don't want you to prevail. Anyway, anything else, Gary?
You may proceed.
Okay.
Just go ahead and go to the next question, and then Laura will move on. Yeah.
Okay. Next question should be California Dave. You should hear that you've been unmuted.
Okay. Thank you, Gerard. And I just want to really give a huge shout out to Marge and her team for all their hard work, and they've been at this a long time. And I don't know of any other county or team that's made this much effort to build rapport with their sheriff and to make multiple contacts. And sounds like she's got a great tool. So we just want to really encourage all the people listening to really go out and approach your sheriff, even if you've never been there. You don't even know where his office is. You may not even know his name. But just start at the beginning. We've got amazing content on the website. We've got mentors. We've got people that can help you get the sheriff in touch with the national leadership. You don't have to be the deal. You don't have to be the walking encyclopedia. You don't have to be the expert. You don't have to regurgitate all the content on the website. That's what the website is for. Point them to the papers. Point them to the sheriff's page. Point them to the national leaderships, the district leaders. Get that sheriff on a phone call with the national leaders, with John. Let them come with a meeting of the minds. Let them make a date to bring in the administrator team, and then we'll have a party. Dave's out.
Okay, thank you, Dave. That's good. And yes, and I agree with that. And God be with us. Okay. I'm going to go to Mr. Black is the next in the queue. You've been unmuted.
Hey, how you doing today?
Maybe you're dead.
Good.
Good. Well, the question I wanted to ask is I had an experience right just recently, and whenever you're exercising the constitutional rights in these administrative tribunals, how come they're always saying you need a mental evaluation? How does one get around that, and have you ever experienced that?
Well, without getting into any specific case or anything, it is a tactic of theirs because, you know, If you're not going to do it their way, you must be crazy. You know? I mean, that's the simplest thing I can tell you. You know, and the reason they jumped on that, again, I discussed earlier about how when they see something that is a success for us, they say, how can we use this? I'm going to tell you one of the things they used. It came out a number of years ago that when you stood in front of a judge, especially at a traffic case, and he goes, do you understand the charges? And the person said, yes, that really was code for do you stand under our jurisdiction? And we tried to not say any of those stupid words and tried to, you know, stay out of their jurisdiction by not doing that. And basically, by doing that, you're just giving them credibility. So, you know, a lot of people went into the courts, and when the judge said, do you understand? They go, no, I don't understand. He goes, well, you don't understand the charges. Well, I know what they are, but I don't understand. And so then he could say, well, you need to be mentally evaluated if you don't understand. But you see, what the guy should have said, well, really, is what I'm saying is I don't stand under your jurisdiction. Now, you don't need a mental evaluation for that, do you? So
no, you
that's kind of where that comes from, and that's kind of how they use that against us. And now they love it so much every time you go into court and you're making headway or you're doing anything to hurt them, the first thing they want to do is have you committed to a mental institution, which, by the way, they can't do legally. They cannot give you any kind of medical service that you don't agree to. They'd have to have you declared mentally incompetent, which it's a whole process. It takes a couple of judges. They can't do it overnight. They can't force treatment on you. So if you don't know that, you know, and then you can't resist. You know, I mean, if you know these things, you can threaten to sue them, and you can tell them that you know it, and that usually ends up, you know, the doctors, you can scare the doctors and say, look, I gave no consent. I'm not dangerous to myself or anyone else. You have to let me go. And if you don't, not only am I going to sue this judge, I'm suing you. I'm going to own your house, your car, and everything else. And the doctor's usually the weak link in this. The judge may want you to go, but what you got to do is know how to get that doctor so that he knows that you know what you're doing and you're speaking intelligently, and you tell him, I'm going to sue your pants off, buddy, and that'll get you out of there pretty quickly. You know, as long as he's – what's that?
No, the reason why I asked that because I see when you do go in there, and a lot of times they try to appoint you an attorney all the time. Okay, and if you do go in there, it's never between you and the prosecutor at that point. It's always you and the judge at that point. So the judge is trying the case, and the prosecutor saying nothing, because I've noticed this, like, in a lot of cases where, you know, the prosecutor doesn't say nothing, and the judge at that point is trying the case, you know, which, you know, one should object to. And also, when you bring up the common law, I don't know if they really truly don't know, or they're just, you know, playing a game where, well, the common law really doesn't apply. You know, I don't know if they really don't know on that
level.
Well,
I'll tell you the truth. I didn't think that they used to know, but I'm convinced that they do know. I mean, they have to be pretty much idiots not to know. If you're listening to their line of questions and the circular reasoning they're going through, and they're doing all kinds of emaciations not to step on themselves to give you any bit of the common law, they've been taught. They've been taught how to question you to suck you away from the common law. So whether they know what they're doing or not, they're doing a scenario. And once they do it once or twice or 10 times, they got to know what they're doing. That's what I think. I mean, if I was on a jury and I had to judge that judge based on what he did to people, I don't know that I'd have much mercy on him after he's thrown the common law out of his court 10 times. There's no excuse for that, because he's supposed to know the law. The judge is supposed to know the law. And when the judge is talking and the prosecutor is not, the judge is practicing law for the bench. And you see, if you're savvy enough, you should be able to tell him, Are you prosecuting the case, Your Honor? I mean, you have to talk to them like that, you know? And then he said, I'll hold you in contempt. Well, I don't think that I should be held in contempt for exercising my Fifth Amendment right of due process. You know, when you speak like that, right away they back off, because they know that they're going to get in trouble, you know? And so you can intimidate a judge and you can question him, as long as you have to be schooled in the fundamental principles so they roll out of your mouth. Look, if you went in there sounding like Thomas Jefferson, they would think that you were a prodigy or something, you know? And that's what I keep saying. All we got to do is study the Constitution and these guys' words and learn how to parrot them at the right time, in the right context. You're a genius, and they won't want to mess with you. But, you know, we always stick to the paperwork.
And, too, I read a lot of your paperwork and everything, and it's very good. And let me ask you this: when you do have that court of record, you know, in their court, you know, you can't speak. You need to be represented. But when you open a common law court of record, isn't the attorneys barred from speaking? Doesn't the man have to come up there with a claim? So doesn't that turn the tables on them?
Well, you see. Look, they don't really know the procedures of a court of record. They haven't, you know, I haven't seen them recognize a court of record in anything we do, because we end up forcing them by our paperwork, and they find out the hard way. You know, we go in there, we accept your oath and bonds. That whole, I don't know, I guess I'll call it the preamble of the lawsuit sets what court you're in. And they don't get it, because they think every court's a court of record. They think that means that they got a transcriber there. That's absolutely what it doesn't mean. You know, it doesn't mean just that. It means more than that, the court of record. And so we haven't had a court of record that really prevailed, because when you go into a court of record, you know, if you're going in as yourself and the other side doesn't ask for a jury as a tribunal, then it's your court. You control it. And I've never seen a judge let anyone. I mean, Thornton claims that he was able to get the judge to realize that and let him go and do what he had to do, you know. But that's a rarity, believe me. And, I mean, you're not going to see that day very soon. I think you're going to see the common law grand jury in there first, and that's what's going to force the court of record, because it takes educating the people. You know, we've been trained slaves, and we really are. You know, if you put an animal in a cage and you leave him in there long enough and you feed him in there and you never let him out, and then you open the door, he'll step out and then he'll turn around and run back in. That's us. We feel better in our chains. You know what I mean? So it's a process, believe me. And I don't think that you'll get a judge to agree with the court of record, because even if he knows what it is, if he lets you do it, he would be chastised. I really believe that the common law grand jury is what's going to hold their feet to the fire, and they're going to uphold the court of record. I don't think it's going to be the judge. I think the jury and the grand juries are going to force the judge to uphold it, and that's where I believe that's going to go. I mean, but you should always run yourself as a court of record. I don't care what you're doing. That's your protocol. That's what you do every time you go into court. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Very good. Okay, I got the next question. It is an unknown from Michigan. You're unmuted. 8644 is your number.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Jody.
Jody.
Yeah, I just wanted to, number one, see if Gary had gotten any of my messages. I've been trying to contact him, and I don't know if he was getting my calls, number one.
I don't know. You had messages, did you say, going to Gary?
Yeah, I was leaving him some voicemail messages, and I didn't know if he was just out or if something's, I'm just getting an answering machine. It's a woman with a British accent. Is that his wife, his answering machine?
No. You're dialing him. What's happening is you're calling him on Skype, and if he's not on Skype, what happens is Skype picks up. And there is a woman with a British accent on Skype.
Okay.
You can't leave a message. And I don't, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if I, and those messages, see, mine rolls to my cell phone and the message gets left there. So I've been bad because I don't check any of those messages, because I shouldn't be getting them on mine. Like if you call me on my Skype number, I don't usually use the Skype messaging. I have it rolled to my cell phone. But you see, what Gary's doing is Skype is picking up the message, and he has to go in there. And he may not be getting them because, look, Gary has had his Skype hacked, and he's been down, and I couldn't even get a hold of him for a week. And then when he put the new one in and he wanted me to accept him, I thought it was the scamster, and I refused him, and it's been fun, believe me.
Oh, great.
So
yeah,
that's probably why you couldn't get him.
I was getting hacked really bad yesterday, too, on my cell phone, so on the web on my cell phone. So, all right, well, that was the one thing I just was trying to, because I had been trying to get a hold of him. I'm still trying to work on getting registered and all that. It's been a real process with me because I'm not real tech savvy, and I just, you know, I have a lot of problems in that area, but I'm working on it. And the other thing I had is about this new form with these, I think there was a third form with the intake forms. Can you explain what that new form is?
The new form with the intake form. I'm not totally familiar what that is. I know they've revamped it, and I can't speak to it because I haven't run through it. I mean,
okay.
I know Gary could answer that if he was on, you know, what the new form is, you know. I mean, they've changed the whole format of how the information goes in and paired it so that it goes to the right place, you know, right away. It's made it more streamlined, and I'm sure that's what that form is doing. You know, I mean, there's been so many, you know, different spreadsheets that have been changed and things jockeyed around and funneled into different places so that they didn't get forgotten. You know, we had a couple of bottlenecks, and that's what we've been trying to cure.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to get it in before next week. I'm supposed to, a week from today, have a psych eval. I do not want it done. It's court-ordered, and I mean, I'd like to, you know, try to get all this paperwork in. I've been working on it for a couple of weeks, and I've just had problem after problem. The guy that was talking earlier about mental evals and being incompetent, they have labeled me. I'm under guardianship. It's not a full guardianship. It's a limited guardianship, which means I have control over my finances and my medical aspects. So, but the judge is court ordering this, so he's kind of trying to usurp, you know, my medical authority over myself. But they have labeled me a legally incapacitated person. So do you know the difference between being incompetent and incapacitated? Are they different or the same?
Well, I don't know, you know, as far as the legal definition of what they consider it. You know, look, at being incapacitated to a person, it could mean you have a bad foot, can't it? I mean, it doesn't mean you can't think straight. You're incapacitated.
Right.
Are they saying you're mentally incapacitated? You know what I mean? I mean, they could be talking about that. I mean, look, if you're incompetent, that means you're not capable of handling any of your affairs. If you're incapacitated, that means that we can train you how to do that. And either way, you don't want it.
Right, either
you know
way, right. But it's right, but it feels like I'm a stalking victim. I have been for many years, and it feels like I'm being, I guess there's a term called excluded, where they basically kind of like exclude you from society, but it's like by force, but you can't, it's very difficult to prove.
Gerard?
Know?
Well, let me tell you, yeah.
Yeah, this is Nathan. I can explain the new process for the caller.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you. I appreciate that.
when you go to the website, there's a frowny face character holding up a sign. You click on that character. It takes you to the page where all the forms are available. You pick out the forms for your case. I would pick unlawful imprisonment because they're trying to take your rights away. There's an intake form and there's an affidavit form. Those are the two forms that you fill out. Do you have Microsoft Office software?
No, I'm trying to explain it to somebody that's not even into this, how to do it. So they started it today, but I don't know how far they've gotten on it. And I'm trying to also get them to do email for me so I can set up an email account. But it's my sister, okay, and she's going to do it for me, set up the email account. And then I asked her if she would just register me, you know, do it physically do it for me, but do it in my name. And she said that she would, so I hope that that's okay with you guys, because I'm just really having a very hard time with, you know, the electronic part aspect of it.
Okay, so your sister's going to help you with the paperwork, and she has Microsoft Office.
Yeah, she's very adept at computers.
Okay, why don't you have your sister call me?
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, what's your name, Nathan?
Nathan, I'm the head of the IRC. My phone number is 586-758-6673.
That's
586-758-6673. I'll talk her through the process. It's not that hard.
Okay, great. What does the IRC stand for? Again, I've heard it, but I don't know what it means.
Investigative Research Committee.
Oh, got it. Okay. Are you in Michigan?
Yes, I am.
Oh, are you in Macomb County?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. I used to live there. I'm up in St. Clair County now.
Okay. Have your sister call me. What's her name?
Her name is Carrie, but she lives out of state. She lives in Illinois. But
that doesn't matter. You know, phones work all across the country. Have her call me.
Right. Okay, that's great. Yeah, I will ask her to do that. I believe she will. I don't know. When's the best time to reach you?
I will. It'll be a cell phone, and it does take messages, and I will call back if I'm not available.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, I will definitely ask her to do that. Yeah, because I'm trying to get this situated before I have to go to that.
We understand that, but we have a rule on Monday night calls not to discuss specific cases. So we don't want to discuss your case.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Have your sister call me.
You'll be able to do that. she'll be able to do that at IRC, and she'll actually get someplace with it.
Oh,
right.
Great.
You know what I mean?
That's
and it's
wonderful.
It's not good to discuss it here anyway, because it's not
okay.
going to go anywhere.
Okay.
And,
I was just simply needing some information. But, no, yeah, thank you all, because, I mean, I love this, and I want to get these – I'm so stressed with these problems. I just want to get it out of the way so I can and get involved in this more and do more of what you guys are doing.
Well, that'll work out. Have your sister call me, and I think we should go to the next caller.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yep. Yep. Thank you. And I just wanted to say, speaking to what her, you know, she asked me about a new form. I didn't know what she was talking about because I thought it was since we put the smiley face. Look, since you put the smiley face and you pick your case, it's very, very much easier than what it used to be. You know, I mean, it's not bad. You go through and you follow that, and you'll get in there and you'll get a person and they'll call you back. See, that's the stuff we've been working on. When you go in there and you actually follow that and you put your case in, you know, our goal is to get back to you within so many hours, within 36 or whatever hours, and then move the case forward. And that's sort of what we've been working out. And I thought there was a new form since then that I didn't hear about, and there obviously there is not. The system we have now, I think, is very good. There's been many, many hours worked on it, and really has all of the bugs worked out of it as far as I know. So that little smiley face, like Nathan says, you click on it, and it really puts you in the right place, follow the directions. And look, once you get in there, the person in the IRC is going to help you with any questions you have. And so that's why we don't want to take up time on a Monday night, which I'm taking up time, but I'm hopefully this will prevent, you know, everybody else will know how that works. Okay, I got California Vivian. You are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi. The reason I'm called, I wanted to talk to you today, is where is John?
He's not
John
here.
Not here. Exactly. He's working on paperwork and burned out tonight. But we got so much important stuff going on that, you know, he's been working 24/7. So you got me tonight.
Oh, okay.
For work.
He's okay. I just wanted to know if everything is okay with him.
No, he's fine. We're just trying to save him.
Oh, all right, sure. My second concern is about those refugees, if there is anything we're doing about it, because this is like the last nail to our coffin. It's really scary.
Yeah, it is, and it's a multi-pronged attack, and we understand that, and it's unfortunate because, look at, some of those, you know, a lot of those refugees are victims too. You know, they're not all terrorists. There's victims there. They got, you know, what they're doing is, they're displacing people because they want the chaos. They want chaos in this country, and they want chaos in every other country. It's about bringing the bottom up so they can bring the top down. And so the more chaos they can make, and look, in this country, they're using it to get criminals in as refugees. In other countries, they're just flooding them, you know, trying to break them and make these people, you know, they're practicing genocide on some of these people. It's ridiculous. And yeah, I mean, it's part of every problem we have is very ugly in this country and out of this country. And we definitely have, look, at the war is on. You know what I mean? We're experiencing it now. You know, this is the war. This is the battle. And so I believe that when we get into the courts, that's why we have to move and push so hard to get in there, because all of this stuff can be taken care of at that court level with the people running the courts. You know what I mean? And making sure that the judges are making the right decisions. You know, which you look at, their decisions are only based on the law through American jurisprudence. A judge doesn't really, everybody thinks a judge gives his opinion. There's very few times when a judge actually gives an opinion, because most of the time he's not giving an opinion. What he's doing is he's a student and a expert of the law. And so his opinion has to be, when you ask a judge by what authority did he make that decision, he has to show you where in the Constitution that lays. So, I mean, he may put it into layman's terms, but it has to be based in American jurisprudence. And so they're not really allowed to make a personal decision or just an arbitrary decision, I guess is the word I'm looking for. It has to be based in law, and that's what's not happening, and that's what we need to put in there. And only the people can do that. And, yeah, we're going to deal with refugees, too.
I'm afraid they're going to let them in before we get into court. And also, I was wondering, two years ago, the government, DHS, has bought a billion and a half of bullets, hollow bullets. I wonder if this is meant to be given to these refugees, and then we have armies in here, hundreds of thousands. We're going to have to address this huge threat. First, they let all the illegals get a driver's license here in California, which opened the door for them to buy guns. And then after that, they get given whatever, this billion and a half bullets. We have armies coming into our country, and it seems like it's a plan. It's something they...
Well, it could be a plan, but I'm not going to... Look, you can sit and wring your hand about their plans. I don't really... They make plans. Men make plans, and God laughs. First of all, you know, they bought all those bullets. What are they going to do with them? I think the big one was 40 caliber bullets they bought, hollow points.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that, you know, that is a gun that I decided to buy because that, you know, I didn't base it on that, but I said, "Oh, how nice. I'll never run out of bullets for my gun." That's the type of thought you have to think. America is the most armed country in the world. Everybody has guns over here. I don't care what they're saying. You're not going to get rid of them. And if they want to have a war, it's going to be it's going to be a 100 years war. They're never going to get the guns out of the people's hands. I don't care what they think they're going to do. It's not going to happen. There's going to be a gun behind every blade of grass. And if they got lots of bullets they're trying to stop the manufacturers from making them. But what do they think? The people aren't going to be able to go in the armories and get them? They think they're not going to get them from the Homeland Security? I don't worry about stuff like that. This is God's worry. That's not my worry. Is to get in the courts in God's time and do it. And I hope to God I don't have to use any bullets because, you know, I'm too old and crotchety and cranky, and I just don't want to go there. You know what I mean? So I'm not really worried about their plans because their plans fall apart regularly. You know, yes, they're making plans. Yes, they're trying to bring people in. And I'll tell you, they tried to bring Russians in and different people of different countries like Russia and China. You know, I have a personal opinion about some of the stuff that went on with Russia and China, and it started with the Olympics. Every time they sent athletes over here to compete in the Olympics, you know, they tell those people how horrible it is in America, and then they come over here and they compete in the Olympics, and they see everybody driving a car, everybody's got a gun, everybody's doing this, and they would defect, and they wouldn't come home, and it was really bad for the country because, you know, for somebody from Russia or China to defect to America, that takes a lot of guts because you know what they do to that person's family back home? If you're on the Olympic team and you don't come home, they're going to torture your family. You got to know that. So it must have been very bad over there for them to defect at that time. But I think what's happened is, you know, people come over here and their spies come over here and they got different troops over here. And I'll be honest with you, I think they get westernized and Americanized, and they realize it's all bullcrap, and I think they turn into us. And I don't think they're so willing to tear this system down because they, look at Russia and China especially, they've been 80 years, 100 years under that iron fist. They've had enough. The people over there have had enough. And I don't believe that they're going to do it. I really don't. I think that they're going to understand. Now,
I'm not afraid of them at all. I'm not afraid of Russia at all. They are the worst enemy.
I think, look, Russia could come to our rescue. I mean, some people, It's all propaganda. Russia could be a very good ally for us, and I don't want to get into
right.
that. I have a feeling that that's the case. Okay, only for what I see in the news. What I see, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Okay, and that's where I'm coming from. So the stuff that's coming out of Russia doesn't scare me at all.
Neither me.
I don't care if they got a bunch of other radical people coming in on the other end. Guess what? There's a bunch of other people on the other side that's going to meet them. God will not be stymied in this, believe me. And so that's my answer to you. Don't worry about it because it's going to work out. And look, we're going to get there. We are there. We're there now. Look, at El Dorado County is so close. We got, and they're not the only ones. You know, we got a couple of other sheriffs that are ready. But we can't make the move until the whole county is ready. In other words, you don't want the sheriff going in and arresting a judge if he doesn't have any local support because he's an elected official, and they will play games with him, and they will get him out of office, and they will try to indict him. And look, we have to defend that sheriff if they try to indict him. We're going to be making phone calls. We're going to maybe even be flying over there because it's that important. So we don't want to pull that trigger until we lay the groundwork. And I probably shouldn't even be talking about it on this, but you know what? They're so stupid, it doesn't matter anyway. Look, they're bringing this on themselves, and the people are reacting. This is our solution. So we have to get everything in place so that once we get in the court, we are firmly in it, and there's no way they can knock us out, and then we can start. And then let me tell you what, once it starts, you're never going to stop it. It only takes a little spark to make a forest fire. And our forefathers said, light the brush fires in people's mind. Brush fires start forest fires. And that's what National Liberty Alliance is doing. We're lighting brush fires in the minds of men. That's our job, and that's what we need to do. We know all the horror stories. Don't even talk about it because you're giving them credibility. You're spreading the fear. Look, they better be afraid of us because where I grew up, all the kids know how to shoot. They could take the eye out of a gnat. You know what I mean? It's a gun culture in America. They can't go there. If they think they're going to go there, the emperor of Japan, the general that bombed Pearl Harbor, when they said, why didn't you go in? He said, because there'd be a gun behind every blade of grass. He knew. And I think China knows, too. Obama went over there, and they said, look, you owe us a lot of money. You know, you did this and that, sold us this bad debt. And he said, don't worry. I'll give you the coal mines. I'll give you all this stuff as collateral. And they said, well, Mr. Obama, that's very nice. But until you get the guns away from the people, we can't collect on our debt because they know, too, the way it is over here. Look, we're not hiding. Chinese people come over here all the time, and they vacation, and they travel, and they look at stuff. And so they understand the American culture better than we think they do. And I'll tell you what, I have other people from other countries, including Russia, that have come over here and they've nationalized, and some of them are here on work visas and stuff. And let me tell you what, they know our Constitution better than we do. If you talk to them, because I've had some of them, some of the older ones say, look, this is just the way it was before the communists took over. This is just the way it was in Germany before Hitler took over. It's the same old story repeating. It's nothing new. It's
yep,
nothing
I, li-
new.
I lived so, through it. Also, last week I was trying to call the number for NLA, and nothing happened. My calls would not go through. So the next day I called Vonage, which is my phone company, and I told them, why is it that this is happening? And the guy told me, okay, hold on, let me see what's going on, and we're going to fix that immediately. And he goes and comes back and tells me, oh, it's because we do not approve, disapprove of this number. That's why you cannot go through, and there are a few numbers that we disapprove of, and that's why your calls cannot go through. And I just blew it. Everybody heard about it on Facebook, all my friends, all the people on my email.
That's the best piece of information you gave us tonight, right now. That's the best thing that came out of this call, that Vonage is censoring NLA's call because they don't approve of it. I think we should give them. I think we should indict them.
They gave me back the number. I mean, today I called and it came through before it rings.
He's probably going to get in trouble for telling you that. But you know what?
Hell, I told them things I never thought I was capable of saying.
Well, look it. We need
now. I'm going to disconnect them. I received my new phone provider today, which is Magic Jack, and I bet you that there are going to be a lot of people who I have called, and somebody even emailed me numbers I can call and start something, you know, like a complaint or even sue them because of fact.
You better check Magic Jack, because I also know Magic Jack doesn't like these group calls, and there's certain numbers that Magic Jack doesn't want you to do.
When I was talking to them in order to get the account, I asked them if there was any numbers that they would disapprove of and I cannot call, and he said, absolutely not. I said, because this is the reason why I'm leaving Vonage, because they have done that to me, and I hope you don't follow suit. And I thought, if I don't make a big deal about it, others will follow Vonage and do the same thing, and we will be completely under the thumb. If they all do it, then we don't have an alternative.
You did a good thing, and you're making a difference, and even mentioning it here tonight with the people on the call, that you know, we understand that their Vonage is censoring, and they're censoring National Liberty Alliance in particular. They don't like this conference call here. So
he said that you guys are one of the numbers they disapprove of, that this is the kind of numbers. I said, what? Who are you to disapprove of anything? If I want to talk to somebody or a group or whatever, how dare you?
I'll tell you what, Magic Jack did give me some paperwork that said they don't like the group calls. They don't like a bunch of people on. And because they're trying to manage their bandwidth. And these type of calls, people talk for 3 hours and they don't like that. You know?
Oh.
So it could be because of that. You have to check and see. Because I know that Magic Jack, there were certain numbers that you couldn't call into because they know that they're like entertainment or they're a group call and there's a lot of talk and they don't want you to dial into them. And usually they have a certain prefix that they can identify them, you know, where they may not recognize this free conference call HD as one of them, but I know they don't like this because you're on here and we're on here and you're going for 3 hours and that takes up a lot of their bandwidth. You know,
that's what it is, hopefully.
Yes, they may not have just censoring us. They just might not like that kind of a conference call. Because I know, like I said, their Magic Deck doesn't like this either, or something like this. I was unable to get into, I think it was TalkShoe or one of the other ones with my Magic Jack. So just check it. And it had nothing to do with them censoring. It had to do with them saving their bandwidth, I think. They didn't say that, but I'm assuming that's what it was. They said, oh, no, none of those group call things. So they probably, you know, they're young and they're starting out. And they don't have unlimited supplies of. Yes?
Do you think we might go on to another caller?
Yeah, we have two more left, so.
Okay, I'll let you go, guys. Thank you for letting me in.
Very good.
Good night.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Okay, next question is Connecticut John.
It was on the it was the guy that had an issue with so many things happened. I forgot now. He was talking about the psychiatric evaluation.
Yeah.
When people are getting asked to go get a psychiatric evaluation, they can plead the fifth. They can take the fifth when they get there. Because you don't have to battle with your own ability to comprehend what's going on. And for the judge or anybody else in the court to state that they needed the person to go for a psychiatric evaluation is bad for the court, because where's their medical expertise that they can go ahead and order that? They're not a physician, and they're certainly not from the medical profession. So I don't understand how a court even has the right to even ask for an evaluation.
You got a good point there. And, I mean, that's probably something that you could even bring up to the judge and say, well, I'm not going to go for it, and I have a Fifth Amendment right to plead the Fifth, and you really don't have a degree, a medical degree to order that, because where's your medical degree, Your Honor? And if you force me into that, I'm going to have, there's going to be repercussions for you.
He's practicing from the bench as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's practicing law from the bench. He's not acting as an administrator.
Yeah. Yeah,
as far as I'm concerned, all judges should face the wall. You shouldn't have to see that. You should look at the judge's back of his head, not the front of his head, because he looks at you and makes a predetermination of what he thinks of you. And to be honest with you, I think the judge shouldn't even be facing the people. They should be facing the wall. He has his left hand and his right hand. He should weigh out the evidence and not predetermine who he's going to blame.
Look, at every court case I was ever involved in, even with John, the judges always predetermined the case. I can honestly say that. And we've had a couple where they've changed their mind after they watched us operate for a little while, that we've actually changed the judge's mind and they ruled for us on a couple occasions. But that's, look, at as far as predetermining goes, I'm going to tell you how easy it is. They if it's you against a bank, it's already predetermined that you must be wrong. Because that judge knows which side his bread's buttered on. And the banks are the ones with the money that grease the palms of the parties that put the judges in office. And they understand
Then he has two masters. He's getting paid from us. He's getting paid from the bank.
Exactly.
So if you have two masters, you're already in trouble.
And they are. And one of the things that Bill Thornton said in his common law stuff, he said, look at, when you want a judge to rule for you, you have to be good enough to give him something to hang his hat on. And actually, one of the cases we won, that's exactly what we did, because the other side was so incompetent and they didn't produce the stuff that they had to produce, that the judge was able to rule for us. And then he would, you know, if they came back and said, well, what are you doing ruling for the people against the bank? He was like, well, you guys didn't give me anything to hang my hat on. He did. You didn't produce a fundamental thing that they asked for, and I had to rule for him. You gotta at least answer what he wanted, and since you didn't do that, there was no place for me to go. I had to rule for him, and that's what you need to do for the judge when you're fighting your case against one of these big corporations. You have to make it so you get them in a horned dilemma. They can't answer you, they don't answer you, and that's what you ram into the judge. I mean, I had a judge who kept asking me, what do you want? I said, you know what I want? You know, I want to see the contract. Without a contract, there's no cause of action. I must have repeated that 25 times. He finally understood that I understood what that was all about. You know what I mean? Because they rule. And if you,
yeah. And what they do, they won't let you. If there is a contract, they won't let you look at it. The judge will say the papers are in order, which is baloney, because you've never seen the evidence before you.
No, I want to see everything. I want to see wedding signatures. I want fingerprints. I want DNA. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You see, they'll do whatever you let them do. But that's what that's about. And I want to get moving. We got more people in the queue.
And then there's one other thing that people got to be aware of when they're in the courtroom. They got to make sure that they have to put something on the back of the pages, because if the clerk hands the judge your motion and it's upside down, he can look at the papers and say, I don't see anything here that will help you in this case. He's looking at the back of the pages because there's no ink there. There's no typing.
Right.
It's a trick that they play, and they do play it.
Well, that's
right.
That's
one of the games they play.
Okay, thank you for that anyway.
All right, good.
Thanks, Skip. Yeah. Okay, next questioner is California Tanya. You've been unmuted.
Yeah, hi. How are you this evening?
Very well, thank you.
Oh, good.
Yes.
I have a question.
So this has to do with the habeas corpus. I just want to verify something. When you apply for the habeas corpus through the IRC, is it okay still to do that even though you have an attorney? It's okay, right? But that's
okay,
on your
you
case?
Can do whatever you yeah. You can do whatever you
okay.
want. You know, your attorney might not think it's okay, but we certainly think it's okay.
Okay. Well, I just, you know, I wanted to make sure of that because I do have an attorney. I'm just actually, I'm kind of doing my own thing. Like, I mean, I'm letting them do their thing, and but I'm doing my own thing because I want my kids back. So I just wanted to reconfirm that because I was listening tonight again, and I don't think I've asked anybody that yet. So I wanted to make sure. And plus, I also have a power of attorney on me. So, but I'm assuming, I don't think that has to, that won't be a conflict with anything, right?
Well, listen, who knows what the judges do, what the judges want to do. And if they know you're doing something with us, especially, if they start getting paperwork with a Coruanta or anything like that, they're going to tell your attorney to shut you down. You better make her stop doing that. That's what they do. They don't like us. They don't like the common law. And if he's doing one thing and your attorney's doing the other, the judge is going to say that you're not cooperating with your attorney. They're going to get into trying to force you to go with the attorney. Now, the attorney can also quit and say, she's not following my advice. He can drop you. Sometimes the judges don't let them do that, but, you know, they certainly have that option. Look, they're not going to take kindly to you doing two things. I mean, they don't want you doing a pro se thing by yourself anyway. They want you to have an attorney because they know they can control that attorney. The attorney has to listen to the judge. He's an officer of the court. And the judge, you know, look, he works in that court, and he'll never win another case in that court if he gets the judge angry. So ultimately, you know, you're like fourth on the attorney's list. So if you're doing two things, at some point you're going to run into trouble with them. They're not going to like it, and they're going to tell you to cease and desist. And then you're either going to have to get rid of your attorney or you're going to have to stop doing the paperwork. I mean, in my opinion, that's what's going to happen. They're not going to let you play with two masters. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Because you're either going to go common law or you're going to go into their statutory. You can't do both.
I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
No, I said, you know, you're going to be able to go to a point until they realize what's going on, and then they're going to start playing hardball with you. I mean, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying be aware that they're not going to take kindly to that. And then, you know, look, when we did the habeas corpus, I'm going to give you an example over there with Dean. You know, when it came in, the judge told the attorney that he appointed to Dean, even though Dean said, I don't want an attorney, keep him away from me. They put him on what they call standby. It's the way they say to you, you're crazy that you don't want an attorney. And the judge told the attorney to get rid of that, to get rid of that habeas corpus. And so he even had paperwork and coerced stuff to say that Dean didn't want it and that when in fact he did. So he forged paperwork and did whatever he had to do. But you see, you can't get rid of a habeas. A lawyer can't get rid of the habeas corpus. And even Dean couldn't get rid of the habeas corpus because it came from the common law grand jury. It isn't up to him. We're looking into a crime. He cannot tell us not to look into that crime. Once somebody came and whispered in our ear that there was a crime and we went over there to investigate it, it doesn't matter what he wants because we're operating under the law. They cannot throw out that habeas corpus. I don't care what they think. There's no motion on it. There's nothing. They have to answer it, and that's end of story. So the judge coerced the lawyer into making a motion to get rid of the habeas corpus, which is a totally bogus thing, and they did it anyway. But what the judge did is he threw the lawyer under the bus because that lawyer can be prosecuted for that. Mm. And actually, so can the judge. But you see, they don't care where they got to go. They just want to get rid of it. And the lawyer was, you know, apparently the judge had enough influence over the lawyer for him to make a stupid illegal motion, which he did. You know, and I mean, of course, we know all those tricks, and we're going to put in a writ of error. We're going to put a judge in there. We're going to put the attorney in there. We're going to sue them all, and they're all going to have to answer. And then they get up there, and they all got to have attorneys. And pretty soon, you got 20 people standing up at the next judge's bench. You think they want to get you out of court? You're darn right they do. Anyway, anything else? I want to move ahead here if we can.
Yes, I do. I have one more question. So you were talking about with somebody else
I think another gentleman, his name was, I don't know, Mike maybe, but and somebody, or maybe, I don't know who it was, somebody brought up a court of record, and you had talked about Bill Fortune's court of record somehow having that enter a courtroom. Is what were you saying? I would like clarification on that.
Well, look, at the court of record is the common law court under the Constitution. And anytime we open up a case, it is a court of record because that's what the introduction to the case proclaims. You know, we state what venue we're in, you know, what jurisdiction, and that's the, you know, the court of record, the constitutional court of record, you know, under the laws of America. So we state that, and it is a court of record. However, the judge doesn't recognize that you are the operating the king's bench, you know, as Thornton says, you're the sovereign of the court, that like you're the one making the rule. And if the other side doesn't have a jury of your peers there to rule against you, then you get to rule. So to get a judge to understand what that is very hard because they've been trained against that. Obviously, the judge wants to make the decisions. He's trying to rule like he's in a chancery court, you know, which is not legal in America. They do them, but they're not legal, and people don't know any better. So, you know, if you acquiesce to their jurisdiction, then you're under it. It's like them saying that income tax is a voluntary thing. Because, you know, you're volunteering in by giving them the information, and so then it moves forward from there, you know. So the court of record, in order to be, you know, we haven't had a judge that, there are judges that have recognized it, but it's usually in smaller cases, you know what I mean, where like Bill Thornton has taken traffic stuff to court under the court of record and made the decisions, and you can do it if you educate the judge. But, you know, if you don't educate the judge, what happens is you end up giving him a writ of error and you sue him. And that's how our court of records prevail. They prevail because we put up enough resistance and they can't answer, and then they're forced to acquiesce. But, you know, the day that our court of record actually gets in, that people can run courts of record in the court, that's going to be a great day for freedom. And basically that's what the common law grand jury is doing, because we're putting the people back in, and that is the court of record. You know, the people running the courts. So, I mean, it's the only court you want. When you go into court, you don't want a chancery court. You don't want an admiralty court. You want a court of record. You want a constitutional court of record. That's what it is.
So that's what I mean. So when you're filing, that's how you started off, right? This is a
when you set it up, that determines, right. You're stating the jurisdiction in the beginning. And it's not, look, it's not blatant in their face because they don't necessarily understand what it means, but that's their problem. It's not our problem. That's their problem. It's all explained in the footnotes. If they took the time to read it, they would understand it. You know what I mean?
Okay. And then you can sign, at the same time, once you do this court of record, you can also file it as an affidavit. Can it all be done at once? That's okay, right? I'm just trying to, you know, I just want to make sure that I'm going to
it has to be open with an affidavit. Look, you got to have a sworn statement if you're doing an action. You know what I'm saying? If you're coming in with an action, you know, a lot of times we end up in court not because we file the action, because they filed and we're answering. And I don't want to discuss court cases, but we tried to come back in as the plaintiff, as the countersuer, you know, because you have more control over the court. So we don't necessarily get a chance to open up court of records all the time. I mean, we do with the common law grand jury because we're filing against them. And, you know, if you got a dispute with your neighbor or something, we file courts of record there. You would want to do the same thing. But generally speaking, when you're fighting with CPS and all these other people, you know, you have to turn it around, and you have to state the jurisdiction you're in, and you have to kind of become the counter plaintiff. You see, they're the plaintiff dragging you in, and you don't want to be the defendant. You want to be against them, and so you need to turn it around, and you need to challenge your jurisdiction, and that's a countersuit, and that makes you the counter plaintiff, and that puts you in a better position, you know, to operate in the court and let them prove you wrong, not the other way around. You know, you don't want to go in there trying to prove a negative, and that's what happens. Okay?
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And just read what's on the site and listen to, you know, it's very important to listen to some of those common law things that we have on there, like Thornton, when he talks about the quarter record. You listen to it once, listen to it twice, it'll all of a sudden it'll crystallize in your brain and you'll never forget it.
Well, you know, it's not that. I'm doing that civics course and I already passed his section, but, you know, sometimes it's so easy to forget because it's so intimidating, the courtroom, like it really is, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you're in there, it's definitely intimidating. There's no doubt about
it. It is intimidating. And when you listen to Bill
Thornton,
and that's
why you
want
to keep your mouth shut when you're in there. You don't want to talk when you're in there until you get really good. You want to just say, I object, and you know, I object because it's not my wish. And, well, what are you talking about? It's all in the paperwork. And whatever they do to you, yeah, you can answer afterwards with a new paper.
Okay.
You see, you get your foot in your mouth. If you get in front, that judge is a wordsmith. And if you get in there and you say too much stuff, you might even be held in contempt and find yourself thrown in jail. Best to keep your mouth shut in court. Especially when you're in there, you know, you don't have a lawyer. They want to give you a lawyer. You know, they're looking to trip you up, and you're not used to court. You're intimidated, you know. And before you know it, you're going to say something on record that you shouldn't have said that you're going to have to fix later. So it's better not to get in that situation, especially when you're a newbie just starting out. You know what I mean? Because they know how to trip you up. They really do. Okay? Thank you very
much. Gerard, can I ask you one question?
What if they
ask you, you walk in there and they say something like, you know, how are you? Or, you know, I don't know. What if they ask you something simple like that? They just want to make simple
communication. You could be, look it, that's fine. What talking about is like when a policeman comes to the window of the car and he starts making conversation. The only reason he's making that conversation is he's trying to get some probable cause on you. When you go into court, you're in a different situation. They've already got a charge on you, and now what the judge is doing is making sure that he's locking down his jurisdiction and that he's got you entering into the contract with him. You know what I mean? I mean, I know a guy that just went through a police academy, you know, a state police academy, and they're telling them when you walk up to the car, you're contracting with the people. They've gotten to the point that they're training the officers to say certain things that end up being a contract. You know, they're so into the fiction now, into the corporate thing, that they understand that they need to contract somehow. There's certain language that officer has to say to get answers out of you, and there's a good little tape on the internet that says why you should never talk to the police, and it's done by a Supreme Court judge. Everybody should go watch that, because he says, look it, they may be looking for one thing, and you open your mouth, they're going to get, they don't care what they get as long as they get something, and they get something so totally different from what they first pulled you over for that you don't even think is wrong. Look, there's 45,000 federal laws to be broken on your way home, and that doesn't even count the local laws. You're breaking a law all the time, whether you know it or not. You know, I like to joke and say, did you cut the tag off your mattress? You're a felon. You know, they said, don't remove this tag. I mean, of course, they're talking about the store, but you know what I mean. There's so many stupid things that can make you a felon today, you know. Let your car insurance lapse and don't pay it. That's a felony. Why is that a felony, you know? I mean, you know, it's not like you took a gun out and robbed somebody because you forgot to get your check in, and they're going to treat you like there's an injured party and all this other stuff. Well, who makes those laws? The insurance companies, the corporations. So now you're a felon because you didn't pay your insurance on time. I mean, technically, now they don't normally do that to people. They'll write you a ticket for no insurance, and when it comes into the court, they're going to say lower it to something else. And they end up getting $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 out of you to make the charge go away. But that's how this system operates. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
So, yeah. Gary from Michigan, you're on the air.
Hi, Gerard. This is Gary Don.
Hey.
Listen, I was ready to jump for joy and get on the first airplane to California. I listen to that lady speaking, and my heart's desire is to live long enough to see the first judge go to jail. And it sounds like that might be one of the counties that it might be perfected in. And I know there's some indifferences, but I'm not in that indifference thing. I'm to the positive side of getting, if we're going to get the country back, we're going to have to start somewheres. And I put all my faith in the fact that you know how to do it. And I know you're concerned about the sheriff's longevity and everything, but if you got his approval and you got the four administrators and you got things going, that's a good place to start. Put a judge in jail. That'll open up the country. Nothing will do more to justice than putting the fear of our Father, the Creator, into them, because they're not giving us our inalienable rights also. And just a little comment I went to a federal court in Detroit. It was an IRS court as a best friend for a fellow. And the person who'd done the paperwork, I heard the first person speak of that. He said they put the same writings on the back of the paper as they did in the front. And the judge, we watched in several different cases before, the judge turned that over and he looked at that and he looked up at the two of us sitting there and he said, you know, you guys could get in trouble for doing this kind of stuff. So, but I got all the confidence in the world, Gerard, that you guys can pinpoint this thing and get the cooperation of that sheriff and it'd be a good place to start in California. We're ready in Michigan. I'm sure. I know there's people lost a little faith, but I try and hang in there, you know. And
listen, it's absolutely, look at, you're right, because as far as where the first one's going to be, it's going to be in a smaller place. You're not going to get it in New York City probably, because they're that much more corrupt over there, you know, and it's harder. It's easier in these sparsely populated counties to get a bigger majority of the people active. You know what I mean?
I agree.
It takes less people to control a county. So we always knew that would probably be one of those counties with less people in it that ended up being the first one. And, yeah, the judge isn't going to go to jail immediately. I mean, well, he will, because the sheriff will put him there. But chances are, doing the operation we're doing with the habeas corpus, the first judge that's going to go to jail is going to be a federal judge. Or maybe it'll be two of them. I don't know. Maybe it'll be a state and a federal.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying. It's going to be a federal judge, and it's not going to be taken lightly. And so, look, I'm like the general out there counting the guns, looking at the lay of the land, making sure we have the high ground, you know, and telling them, don't shoot until you see the white of their eyes. I want to win this just as bad as anybody else, but I don't want to make a stupid mistake. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's a couple of little things we need to do, and it's not that. Look, it's going to be, they have to figure out how to rally support. You see, that's what you people need to be doing in your counties. Now you got this sheriff's ear. You have to bring other people in. You have to start touting this. You have to bring the sheriff around and let him start preaching that common law. Let the people know that you have a sheriff that's going to stand on these principles. Look at no injured party, no crime. You know, start rallying the people in the county around the sheriff. It shouldn't be that hard to do. You know,
we've worked both counties. My mailbox is in a different county. We work both counties up here in the thumb of Michigan with both sheriffs. And we've got them to agree that this is the way it should be, but they're not willing to make the first step. Okay? They're not willing to make that first step.
And there's a reason for that. And they know.
Mm-hmm.
Look, sheriffs have been very, very brave and very successful turning the federal government back out of their counties, because that's more of an accepted role for them, because the federal government is that foreign in their county, and the federal government even knows their place, and Sheriff Mack won the case, and so there's a lot of precedent for it. But for a sheriff to go into his county and arrest a public official, an elected official in his county, He has to deal with all of the politics and everything else that comes into that now. Because they'll say, oh, wait a minute, the party helped get you there. We're going to pull our support. Oh, this, that. The guy has to have a lot of fortitude, and I understand why they balk. And not only that, like in my own county here, I know the people we're fighting. They're my neighbors. My kids went to school with them. It's very hard to go in there and put them in jail. I mean, and they're not bad people. You know what I'm saying? And I have a business in town, so now we're going to go and we're going to arrest this guy. And we go, what are you bothering the poor clerk for? Well, because she violated the Constitution. She violated my right. You know, people don't get it. They're like, oh, leave her alone, that type of stuff. This is what the sheriffs have got to put up with. So you have to look at, you want to pick the case, and you want to make it serious enough so that they don't think you're picking on them. You know what I mean? It has to be something that, you know. I mean, our own chief court clerk here doesn't have an oath of office. She shouldn't even be in there. And the judges that she's serving under for two election cycles here and different judges, what's the matter with them? They don't know that the New York State Constitution says that these people have to have an oath of office? I mean, technically, they don't have a clerk in there. But they, you know, and I mean, we haven't gone after her because she's not the one we want. She's really not the one, you know, she's just a useful idiot because she doesn't understand. And I'm not going to go after this clerk who's, you know, the mother of one of the kids my kids play with to make an example out of her about an oath of office. I'm mad at the judges. The judges know better. Why are they putting this clerk neck on the line? That's what they're doing. And I think they're doing it because they understand that they can use that to get out of something that gets put in it, and they'll throw her under the bus when they need to. You understand what I'm saying? In other words,
definitely.
They didn't
definitely.
Give her an oath of office for a reason, and that reason is to get them out of trouble, and I think that they're that evil, okay?
Yeah.
So before I come into my county and arrest a judge, believe me, I want all my ducks in order because it goes that deep, the corruption, and I want to make sure that I come in there with enough people that I don't have to worry about turning around and having nobody behind me. You know what I'm saying? And it's not that hard to do, and you don't need that many people. Like you said, look, you're working two counties in the thumb. Some places it's very easy to work even four counties because you're that close. But some counties, you know, you get in a certain area, it's less than an hour's ride to any one of the four. Those counties should work together. And you put the people from that county that sheriff's in up front and the people from the other county in the back, and you make a lot of noise, and all they do is they see a lot of people and the other people in the front can say, where are your constituents? Yeah, me too. And that's the end of that. They stop counting hands then, you know. I mean, I have had a sheriff in a meeting come up and say, well, how many of your people – you know, our vote in my county, and for a show of hands. So look at, he's a political animal. He's counting at the meeting. You know, because we have three counties here that our Tea Party's cooperated in. You know, three counties that are back to back here, and the sheriff of my county. That's one of the things he did. Who's from Greene County? You know, well, because he wants to know. You know, he's gonna listen more to somebody in his county because they're a constituent of his. Somebody in the next county is not a constituent, you know. So that's the answer to that. And I don't, you know, look at there's a fine line between pleasure and pain is all I can tell you. And time is coming, and we're not gonna push it. It's God's timing, and it's how everything gets set up. We're very close in a couple of places, and believe me, we will pull the trigger when the time is right. It's just not, everything is not just set up just right yet, but it's coming. It's really coming. And I know everybody's chomping at the bit, but we want to make sure it's right. You know what I mean? This is the war, and we are going in, and you know, I want to make sure the ammo's there and the guns are clean and let's go. And that's all. I mean, I'm not that type of person either. I'm the one that usually operates and shoots from the hip. So that's coming from a guy who shoots from the hip most of the time.
Yep.
You know, John's way more careful than I am, and I agree with him on this. You know, I mean, that's why it's good to have a lot of people doing this, a lot of different heads on the thing. You know.
Well, I appreciate it, and I yield. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Gary.
And our Father bless. Bye-bye.
God bless, too. Yep. Okay. Mr. Black, I think you were in here before, but go ahead. You are unmuted, Ms. Black. $15.68, going once. Mr. Black, you are unmuted.
Hello?
Okay. I'm going to mute you. And then I'm going to unmute you.
Hello?
Yes. Are you there? Is this Mr. Black?
Yeah, this is. I just want to make a quick statement. And you can just answer the question. And the quick statement was other callers that called in, and they were speaking about this dental evaluation. One thing I wanted to say was...
Can you speak up? I can't. I'm having trouble hearing you. Go ahead. Try to do it a little louder.
Can you hear me now?
That's better. Yep.
Okay. What I'm saying is they're saying that you're not competent to represent yourself, but you're competent enough to take a plea. So... You know, they can't have it both ways. You can answer that. Now you're the floor.
That's a good point. That's a good point. You're not competent to represent yourself, but you're competent enough to plea, right?
Correct.
Well, that's why you don't want to plead. Usually, you want to get out of court without pleading if you can. Usually, the best thing to do when they first bring you in, especially on, you say, I need time to seek counsel. So I don't want to enter a plea at this time. I'll come back with counsel. And usually the judges will yield right away when you say that. You know, they don't know what it means when you say, when you say I'm going to seek counsel, you know, they'll assume you're going to get an attorney. But you're right. I'm confident enough to plea. Although sometimes people plea and then they change their plea. Of course, that doesn't give you a lot of credibility when... You know, in front of a jury. Well, first he pleaded guilty, and then he pleaded it was coerced. You know, that you're better off doing it right the first time. Like I said, you're putting a show on when you go to court. So, and that is a good point, and you're absolutely right. I'm going to go to Alabama Keith now. You have the mic. Alabama Keith, you are on.
Hey, how's it going, Gerard?
Hey.
Hey, mine's kind of a general question on, you know, we all know that, you know, when Congress passes laws, codes, statutes, whatever, when they're detriment to people's rights, you know, they're pretty much null and void, right?
That's right.
All right. Now, what if they pass laws or a statute or code that's actually protecting the people?
Well... If a statute is running under a constitutional premise, then it's legal.
Right. You know, it would fall under the Supreme Court.
You can enforce a legal. That's right. It's legal if it's constitutional. That's all we're complaining about, that they're unconstitutional, most of them.
Okay. So, you know, you don't want to use all the statutes and codes because a lot of them are unconstitutional, but... You know, if you use one that is constitutional, that's actually protecting and upholding the people's rights, then that statute or code would fall under the Supremacy Clause, Article 6, Clause 2, right?
Yes, yes. Well, look, okay. we use U.S. Code, and U.S. Code is a statute, is it not?
Well... Generally, you know, take for example.
We've had people saying you can't use U.S. code because you're using statutes, you're entering things into fiction, and blah blah blah. And we kind of like let that go by because you're giving too much credibility to the fiction. I just want to get that out of the way. You know, I go ahead. I kind of think I know where you're going, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, we take the Banking Act. You know, if you look that up in the statutes at large, you know. I have the entire statutes at large downloaded, and that's like over 10 gigs of nothing but text documents. You think about printing all that up, how many reams of paper, you'd have a whole library and a small forest cut down. But anyhow, the Banking Act is only about 20 pages. And then if you bring up the United States Code, which is the codified version of the same thing, and it's over 200 pages of gobbledygook of lawyer gibberish. You know, they took it and turned it into, you know, uncomprehensible 200 pages or more than 200 pages. They took 20 pages and just turned it into a bunch of crap. But the statutes will prevail over the code. But, you know, my whole thing is basically, you know, if there is a code, that it's codified from the statutes at large, and it's does protect you, not just you, but the people, then it would fall under the Constitution of the Supremacy Clause. I just wanted to clarify that. I do believe
that Bill Thornton says that in his paperwork also, that he would use a statute when it fits, when it's constitutional and it fits the case.
Absolutely, he does say that. Absolutely,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, we learned a lot of the stuff that we're doing through him. You know, I mean, we didn't necessarily agree with everything he said, because as we got along, we found certain things with the fiction that I don't think he knew about. Although I think he's come along more along our lines now than he used to be. I think he thought we were biting off more than we could chew at the time, but you see. You know, he was going in there and doing little cases here and there and getting the court to agree with him, and he was having some success. But the reason we took such a big bite is because we have no time left. We can't play this game, you know, going in and getting one judge at a time. Well, it'll take us 200 years to straighten the country out at that rate. So, yeah, we took a big bite. We took a big bite because we had to, because it was time to. You know what I mean? And yes, I agree. I know what I was going to get at. You talk about, you know, they turned something that was 26 pages into 200. Imagine that. Look at all these writs that we're doing that they want to say are obsolete. You know, they don't say they're illegal. They don't say that they can't use them anymore. They say they're obsolete. So they take your mandamus and they turn it into what they call an Article 78. What's an Article 78? It's a long, drawn-out mandamus that they put gobbledygook in, and they go into areas where they should never go in the first place. It's not even – I don't even know how they consider it a mandamus anymore. Well, they don't. They call it an Article 78. Well, it almost sounds like a military thing, doesn't it? We're gonna give you an Article 78, right? So that's the trick of the lawyers. And then we've also learned that, you know – The Congress and the Senate and that, they're not writing the bills. They got a bunch of lawyers writing them, and half the time they're voting on them without even reading them, or even understanding them, because they're not written in plain language. They're written in legalese, which they shouldn't be, you know. And then you got stupid Pelosi up there going, "You got to pass it to see what's in it." That's ridiculous. Because the lawyers wrote it, and then we're going to take it apart after. So they got the guys with the horns and the wings and the forked tails writing the law, and then we're going to go through it to see what's in it, right? And I love that. I love that comment that the one doctor said. He said, "Dear Nancy, that's not the definition of a bill. That's the definition of a stool sample. You got to pass it to see what's in it." So. Anyway, that's where America's at. You know, we got a lot of stool samples coming through Congress, and, you know, they're writing all these bills and trying to complicate things, because that's what lawyers do. They complicate things. You know, look at our forefathers. They understood what they were doing when they made that original 13th Amendment that said no titles and nobility. They didn't want lawyers running for offices. Things weren't as bad back then as they are today with the lawyers and the Bar Association, and they knew then, you know. And I think it's pretty amazing that if you read Washington's farewell address, a big half of it is about the parties, warning about the parties ruining the nation. That's exactly what happened, exactly what he predicted. I mean, how could these guys have such forethought, such being able to see so far ahead? And he warned. He said, "Look, they'll take the reins of power and take them away from the people, the very reins that rose them up into power." And that's exactly what they did with the party system and the committee man system. They took the reins away from the people and they put them into their hands, and they control the whole system. They control the judges. They control everybody. So now you got a Democratic and Republican party, and it doesn't even make a difference to who you're with, because they're, because both of them are usurping the Constitution and usurping our rights, and they just keep marching forward and forward and forward. And the old saying, one step backwards, you back them up, but then they take two steps forward to the goal that they want, and until you get to today at 2015, where we are today. Anyway, I thank you for that, Keith. Anything else?
Yeah, I would rather talk about it privately than over there, but we'll do that another time.
Yeah, so you can get a hold of me on Skype. We'll talk.
Yep.
Anyway, I've come to the end of the queue, believe it or not. I don't see anybody else waiting. This has got to be some kind of a record here. It's 11:21, so
if nobody has
anything else.
Is that a first?
It's happened before, but I don't know if it's ever happened at 11:21, though. So, yeah, I think it's probably a first. We actually got to talk to everybody. That's because all the people that didn't want to talk to me when they found out that John wasn't here, they probably left. Well, we got Ricky from Florida. Go ahead. We'll give you a couple minutes. We got a couple minutes left. I can still get in trouble. Go ahead.
Hi, Gerard. I assume I'm coming through okay.
You're a little low, but go ahead.
Okay, I'll try to get this thing in front of the mouth a little bit better. I'll be doggone. Hold on 48 minutes and my handset battery is beeping at me, so it's going to take me about 30 seconds to get to the bedroom, pick up the other handset, turn it on, unplug the headset from this one, and put it in the other one, if you'll be...
I can't make out anything you're saying. You're very low. Can you turn up your mic or get closer to it? I missed that whole sentence there. Start over again. Let me see if I can get it.
Okay. Sorry, I had to switch handsets here. My battery on my phone started beeping at me. Okay.
Wow.
I saw a couple of things on the internet today I thought you might be interested in. One was a video from the Florida Sheriff's Association, and it concerned sovereign citizens. And while they did say one time that the majority of these people are not dangerous, then it went on to basically classify anyone who questioned the government or believed in the Constitution as domestic terrorists. And I got that in a link in an email that I received.
Well, that's a law enforcement report that's been put out a couple of years ago, and they're using the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL as their resources for that, claiming that sovereign citizens are more dangerous than Al-Qaeda or ISIS, which is absolutely ridiculous. See, what they're trying to do is to vilify the Constitution. You know,
right.
Fox News put that on their ticker tape on the bottom of the screen. Everybody should call them up and holler at them.
Yes, Jay. This was a new video that just came out, just came on the internet for the first time today. Okay, and also got a link to a court procedure that was on Jason Hoyt's. It was a live transmission at the time, but it's on Jason Hoyt's website, and someone we used to know was trying to get three people out of jail, and you could tell by the court procedures that he was not in a common law court, but it did appear to be a federal court. And his motion to dismiss was overruled.
Go ahead.
No, it was live. It was live from the courtroom. Okay.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I have a little app called audio recorder, voice recorder, and I can set my sound card to for the output of the sound card that you hear through the speakers to also be the input to voice recorder, and I forgot to do that before the video started. But I still have the website. Would you like for me just to forward you those two emails that have the links into them and let you look them up yourself?
Yeah, send them. Look at Gerard at National Liberty Alliance. If you could forward it, I'd be very interested in looking at that. Gerard, G-E-R-A-R-D.
Right. I'll just bring the web pages up, and as a matter of fact, I'm bringing one of them up as we speak. The one for Jason W. Hoyt, the link says Periscope.tv/Jason Hoyt, and that's the only thing I see in the address bar.
Okay, well, it's slash Jason Hoyt, but what was – I didn't hear the beginning. I heard slash Jason
okay.
Hoyt, but what is it – what, Court TV?
No, not Court TV. Periscope, P-E-R-I-S-C-O-P-E. It's http://www.periscope.tv/Jason Hoyt.
Okay.
Right.
Jason Hoyt. Okay,
Hoyt.
I'll see if I can get that. Yeah.
Okay. And give me a second
but
here.
But that's the newest stuff out about the sovereign movement.
No, that's the court case. That was where, like I said, so I don't know if I want to say his name on the telephone. But
uh-huh.
He was someone who was with us at one time and left, to run his own show.
Right.
And he's in Northwest Florida. I forget the name of the county. Anyway.
Right.
This one is a court case that he was representing three people trying to get them out of jail.
Yeah, but meanwhile, he was in their court. He wasn't in a court of record. He was floundering out there, right?
That's what it looked like to me. I've gone
That's
over and over this bringing suit in federal court, charging lack of jurisdiction. I didn't hear anything like that in the whole procedure. And the judge was acting as a judge, and that was obvious. So I'll send you that link, and I'll send you also the one to the video that was put out by the Florida Sheriff's Association.
Yeah. So that was Periscope. What was it? Periscope. www.periscope.
Dot TV.
.tv/Jason Hoyt.
Right. Periscope, like the scope on a submarine.
Right.
Yeah. .tv, like in television. /Jason Hoyt. And let's see here.
Okay.
And
yeah, I'll put that in. I'm interested in seeing that. That would be interesting to see what happened there. And send me anything else you have, and we'll touch base. This
okay.
is Ricky, right?
Right.
Actually, I have your phone number there. Maybe I'll give you a call sometime. And
okay.
Because I'm having a hard time hearing you on this line. What's
well,
that?
Actually, it's probably my headset. My microphone doesn't pick up very good because it's pointed crossways at my mouth, and I'm a person who talks very softly.
Right.
But the a co-conspirator in the one about the sovereign citizen was a company called Stars and Shield. So
uh-huh.
I took their link off of that. I believe it was a YouTube site. And it went to a company who provides insurance for law enforcement.
Oh, imagine that.
There it is. Yeah, imagine that. Uh-oh, it's gone.
Hello, folks, and thank you for joining me.
Okay, very good.
No, it's not. The one I've got playing right now is not it.
Okay, so send me that in at Gerard at National Liberty Alliance, which you can send, and I'll look at that other that Periscope TV, and I'll see what that's about. I appreciate the information.
I'll send
there.
Links. I'll send both of those links. So if you want to just wait until the email gets there, they should be hot if you use HTML mail.
Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
Well, I'll get off the phone then. Get off the phone and get the email made.
Thank you, Ricky. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Yep. We have another caller, Kim from Michigan is in. Go ahead, Kim. We got a few minutes.
Hi, Gerard. This is Tim.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to insert a little levity at this point in the call. Thought you had a little free time. I just wanted to ask you, do you know the reason that politicians and diapers are a lot the same?
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have been muted. I said I could guess if you want me to. Are you there, Michigan? Anyway, I don't know what happened that you can't hear me or you're not be able to talk. Maybe you got muted. I don't show you as being muted here. Anyway, what do politicians and diapers have in common? And I think it's they're usually full of crap, and they need to be changed often. That's my guess. Okay. Thank you for the levity there.
Hi.
Hey, there you go.
Okay, yeah, you got the answer exactly right there, Gerard. And thanks again for all that you guys are doing. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and it depends on all you guys out there doing what you're doing, and in order for us to get to where we need to be, and I think we're getting there, and just hold on to your hats because once we go down that hill, it's going to just speed up. So I hope everybody's ready.
Yes, sir.
I really think that we're getting ready to go down that sled ride, and we're going to enjoy it. So with that. You were the last caller. I guess I'll close the meeting out. Thank you, everybody, for your participation. We appreciate it. And keep the faith, and God bless, and don't be intimidated, and don't give them any credibility because they have none. Okay? Thanks a lot, folks.
Thanks, Gerard. Good night.
Yeah, we'll see you.
Good night, all.
Good night.